I'm Rhoda and I'm an addict. And I would like to thank God for allowing me to be here. I got in about 20 minutes ago, so we were pushing it. And I thank God for God. I thank God for this program. And I thank God for the people that showed up for me today. The disease of addiction. Before I got here, I'd used for about 20 years of my life. And I never paid attention to what the drugs had always done. You know, in the end, I was jobless, incapable of working, didn't care to care for my kids. At my mother's house, 31 years old, boyfriend living with me. And when I look back, that's what I'd always done. Always used, always got a man that could take care of me. And today, this topic is so necessary for me, indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Before I got here, I trusted in me, you know, but whew, this is kind of hard to, and I'm just trying to give you a description of what my life was like before I got here and what it's like today. I always had this air that I can do it myself. I don't need nobody. And a state of manipulation. And I'm putting these defects out there because I didn't know that they were true until I got here. When I got into treatment, 1996, I went into treatment. And 30 days later, I was back home. Mind you, I'd been to about 17 treatment facilities before that time. I came to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting when I was about 21 years old, and I walked in, and they looked at me, and I left. No one smiled. No one said, "Welcome to the newcomer," and I left. You know, I told my mother, "I ain't coming back here no more." So that was age 21. Age 31, I was in treatment. And in there, I found out I was pregnant. And I said, it ain't no way I'm had no baby and no treatment. So the lady said, "Call your mama, because that's what you always do." So I said, "All right, shit, I'm going home." And a year later, the same date that I went, 1996, I was back there 1997, July 1st. What I noticed was that something will take place, just didn't know what, because it was just amazing that a year later, same date, same counselor, in the same room. Okay. What I knew when I walked in, because they reminded me, and they asked me, "Why do you think we should have you back?" And I remember sitting there crying, telling them, "I don't know, but I'm back, and I need some help." But I got in there, and I was able, I noticed right from the start, they reminded me that I was a liar, you know, and I was dishonest. I knew that I would minimize my life, and I would minimize yours if you let me. I got in there, and they gave me the keys to their van to take everybody wherever they needed to go. And I was who I was. You know, I bribed people to go to the grocery store and pick up some cookies. I bribed people, a pack of cigarettes, come and, you know, help me meet the man on the corner so I can get my carton of cigarettes. And I'm describing all of this because when I look at indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles, it tells me that I'm against what the program has to offer. And I'm putting it out here because this is who I was. You know, and what I understand about the disease of addiction is that it wants my life, you know, and as a result, Once I got here and I got the NA, and y'all said welcome, y'all told me keep coming back, y'all told me get a home group, y'all told me to get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor before I got out of treatment because it was one of the requirements to get out. But my purpose for getting a sponsor was very wrong. Get one to get out. Because I also live with a state that I can do anything successfully. And if getting a sponsor is a part of the requirement, then you do just that. And that's what I did. But I got with this lady, and I met her behind her back of her head. Hey, can I have your number so I can call you? You know, and I'm talking about the God of my understanding and helping me to understand why I was really here. So I got with her, and she came and picked me up because another requirement is that she came for one day and took me out wherever and did a meeting. And before I got out of the car, she said, what you going to do when you get out? That's a real simple question. You know, my answer to her was that I was going to get out of treatment, go move with the kid's father, and live happily ever after. She said, shit. Try something else. That has not worked for you for so long. Try something else. So I got in, and I did everything you guys asked me to do. I was an NA cheerleader, you know, and it was because y'all gave me something I never had. You know what I'm saying? And it was simple, freedom from active addiction. I ain't never, ever had to use again if I didn't want to. And what I understood clearly coming in as I began to start working the steps was that I had a choice. I never knew that then. You know, I remember saying, I'm going to die using, and it was okay. You know, but as a result of identifying that I was powerless over the disease of my addiction and that whatever I did in my addiction, it wasn't necessary that I worry about it in the first step. You know, so I kind of just began to start understanding that I had a choice and I ain't never had to use it. And I began to get happy. You know what I'm saying? I was going to a meeting every day. I was meeting people. People were saying hello, you know. And I was beginning to feel real good. And what became apparent was that I still had these defects. And the kid's father, he had did his thing, and he sold drugs, and y'all told me I couldn't be around him. So what I would do was come to a meeting on the weekends, take the kids to the father, hang out over there, call my sponsor, where you at? Over here. Meet me at a meeting. Okay. So I did this for a while I just knew it was impossible. When you guys talk about being around people, places, and things, the kid's father just wasn't in that definition. And I kept going. And one day, some people came by, they purchased what they purchased, and they dropped it. He was in the bathroom, the kids was asleep, and it was just me. And for the first time in my life, I gave somebody back their stuff. And from that day, what I knew was that I no longer wanted to use, and that was the choice y'all was talking about. You know, you can be around it, but will you pick it up? Y'all told me I didn't have to pick up even if I wanted to. So it was that situation that really got me motivated into wanting to learn to live and apply the steps to my life. And I had it fairly easy coming in, and what I understand today was that denial came in and kind of let me not see some stuff. I got into my second step, and I started to believe in the group, you know, somebody other than myself, and I started looking at all the crazy things I had done to get high. You know, I pimp my girlfriends. They come over just to get high. I be like on the phone, yeah, she over here. Mm-hmm. You know, letting people do stuff I wouldn't want to do. You know, that was me. And there was another situation. And in the second step, it talks about there are things that are happening in our life that we don't understand. And for the first time in my life, I had to get honest with me and somebody else. The kid's father had asked me, did I want to be with him? And I was scared because he had told me if I ever left, he would kill me. And so I didn't want to tell him the truth. I knew if I ever got clean, you had to go. I knew that. And the day came, and I walked in. He was kind of teary-eyed, and he asked a question, and I remember saying, God, are you there? Are you there? You know. And so I knew that it was necessary because this is what the program asked me. It asked me to get honest. And so I told him I didn't want him anymore. And I immediately picked up my kids, one in one hand, tried to grab the other one, and ran out the door. And by the time I got to my car, he had had a gun in my head. But for a split second, it was dark, and I was on 495. Now, that was a coincidence that the literature reminds me that it's unbelievable. You know, but as a result of that situation, it just allowed me to believe in the process, that the God that I have to seek in here, because I remember y'all telling me, find the God and find him now. Y'all didn't tell me that a year when I was in the program. Y'all told me that the first day I walked in, find the God and find him now. You're going to need him. You know, and I'm like, okay, find a God, find him now. Well, I'm going to need him, you know. And I'm not sure how sure I ever was about this program, but as a result of these incidents that's happened in my life, I began to just trust the process. Indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. And I'm coming up on 9 years clean. I looked in my drawer about a month ago. First, let me say this. When they called me and asked me to do this meeting, they had caught me in the smack of my disease, and I didn't know it. So I thank God for the person that called me and asked me to do this meeting. I looked in my drawer where I keep my step work, and I looked on the page. 2 years ago, I was working on my 10th step. And the 10th step is the step that allows me to see myself on a daily basis. Somewhere back there, I had made a decision to go to school. And I didn't realize that as a result of making a decision to go to school, I had also made some decisions to not do what was necessary. And today it hurts. Let me say that. I had came to my sponsor and I shared with her that I didn't know how to look at myself on a daily basis, my attitude. I don't have one of those. My behavior, I don't do nothing but go to work, get the kids, come home, you know, that go to a meeting, that sort of thing. So denial has set in. And the literature talks about denial will rob us. You know, what we need. So I'm trying to paint a picture of how the literature states it real clear. The disease is baffling, it's insidious, and it wants your life. Because I'm telling you, when I made that decision to go back to school, and I was in the process of working my 10th step, you couldn't have told me that I would no longer go to a meeting. Didn't care to talk to anybody on the phone. Didn't care to call my sponsor. Like I did in the beginning. And I got complacent. I got very complacent. Anybody to call, I got to do some schoolwork. I ain't done nothing. Nothing. You know what I'm saying? And I'm talking about, when I looked on the paper, it said September 9th, 2003. Last week, I called my sponsor, and I told her I was in a lot of pain. And she said, well, it's about time to get to work. And I said, you know, it would be an awful thing for me to start the work today because they have asked me to share the meeting, and I don't want to just do my step work trying to act as if I do everything right. You know what I'm saying? She said, well, she should have started at some point. I understood that clearly. But, and I don't, there is something that's been inside of me, and I can't identify it. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't identify it. But it's like when I'm trying to, even in the process of making the daily effort to sit down, pray, read over the 10th step, something says, no, no. And I don't know what it is. And I identified it as being complacent, but this has been 2 years now. You know, and if complacency sat in that long, I'm in trouble. Indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. The principles that I've learned, I've lived. I suffer with denial too, because I want to believe that I come in and I do everything you guys ask me to do. You know what I'm saying? And as a result of this situation, I don't do everything y'all ask me to do. You know, and I remember doing it so well that at the end of the day, I was beat up. Where, like, because I came in real enthused, and I found out I picked up this superwoman mentality, that I can work, I can pick up the kids, I can go take them where they need to go, I can wash the clothes, I can all these things in one day. And I'm talking about things that take weeks. I would do it in a day. And I found out that it's okay that you don't make the bed up sometimes. You know what I'm saying? It's okay that you don't dust. You know, it'll last for another 2 days at least, you know. And so I picked up this thing that it got to be done. It got to be done now because I'm living spiritual principles and I'm doing it right. And this is my way of doing it, you know. And I'm just talking about whatever daily schedule I had. And I'm telling you, it was massive in a day. And it was one that I didn't ask for, but it's one that I'm grateful for, because when I got here, I didn't know what to do. And y'all told me that I could serve. Serve? What's that? Today, that's my life. That's my connection to NA. That's my way of giving it back. I suffer with a self-centered disease. I'm selfish. I'm an only child, you know. So this program and the people around me has helped me and taught me how to share things. And a lot of times what I'm finding, I just need to share me. You know what I'm saying? But because I'm so much on the go, hey, how you doing? And I've done that for a long time. Some people, I don't even know their name. You know what I'm saying? As a result of, hey, gotta go. On to the next mission, you know. And that doesn't feel good today, because you and walk past 1,000 people and you only know 10 of them. What's wrong with that picture? When they called me to do this meeting, I had left the boyfriend again. And again, we've been together 5 years, and again. And I found myself at the NA meeting having me a good time. The only thing I want, is what I'm noticing, is a good time. I don't want to suffer the pain. I don't want to suffer the withdrawal. Was looking for a good time, and that good time landed me a place I didn't want to be, because I got some integrity. This program gave me some integrity, and I don't want to give it away. And I met with somebody, good conversation, but I still had the boyfriend. And I was told I need to get honest, and that's my only way out. That's my only way out. And I don't have a watch either, so please don't let me. Okay. And that's where they caught me when they called me. One foot in, one foot out. My fourth step tells me that I'm one foot in a relationship, one foot out. And I said, oh my God, how did I get to a place where I had worked so hard to get away from by practicing the principles of the program? I was devastated. And what that showed me was that at any given time, if I'm not paying attention, I'm going to go back to the old behavior. And I'm the one that sat up there and said, shit, that ain't true. I would never do that. You know, and I thank God for the people before me. And I don't hear it that often, but they used to say, you don't have to do that. I've already done it for you. They told me that they already suffered the pain. They already met them. They did all of that for me. You know, but what I understand is that it's necessary that I get my own experience. But somewhere in the back of my mind on my way down here, it was like, gee, I wish that I let them do that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm real grateful, but I don't hear that no more. And I know that that's a necessary statement. I already done that. You don't have to do that. I've already done that for you, you know. And So today, out of force, I'm forced to pick up my 10th step. Or die. You know, I remember the day in between missing my 6th and 7th step that I found out for me and my disease, either I'm living or I'm dying. One or the other. Ain't no more in between. It ain't no more gray areas, you know. And that was good for me because I don't need a way out. You got a crack there, I might slide right through it, you know. Indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. And I thought I probably couldn't do this without saying, and it states in the, how it works, indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles, the three things that are indispensable. If I don't get honest, if I ain't open to the idea that I ain't got to use, and if I become unwilling to not do the necessary footwork, I'm in trouble. With these things, we are well on our way. You know, and I remember trying to practice these principles so well, only to find out that I'm not perfect, that I am subject to fall short. I got shortcomings, and I'm talking about how the disease plagued my mind. You perfect as I, you know, you can do all this in a day, you good. You know what I'm saying? And I functioned off of that for a lot of years in this program, only to find out today, 8.5 years later, I'm subject to die. Why? Don't go to as many meetings. I don't care about the phone calls, you know. But God has, he does for me what I can't do for myself. He put some women in my life, and I'm talking about women that I had always sat in the chair and said, gee, I wonder, you know, I would like to get to know her, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not doing that, you know what I'm saying? He's putting people in my life, and I'm glad, because as a result of these last 2 years, I really feel like I've been pushing a lot of people away, not intentionally, not purposely, but just away, because I gotta go to school, I got to read the book. If I talk on the phone all night, I can't do X, Y, Z. And if I am really honest with myself, I could do all of that. You know what I'm saying? Because I asked God to take my will in my life and guide me in my recovery on a daily basis. You know what I'm saying? And all the strength and excitement, endurance, the willingness that I had when I first got here, I need to find. I'm reasonably happy today. I'm glad I'm here. This was necessary because it helped me, help put me back where I needed to be. And I'm not sure if I hadn't got that phone call to ask me to do this meeting where I would be today. And I'm just talking about doing the things I had always done that got me my seat in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm Rhoda from D.C. Thanks for allowing me to share.